A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today. Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, your definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Gays Revolting, although you might have a bit of a hard time following us on Instagram because we've been blacklisted because homophobic people have taken our Instagram down for
because
some reason.
We posted a picture of Mikey's butt.
His beautiful butt
in the bathtub. Or someone complained about it.
Or people might think we're just homophobic because we're called Gays Revolting.
That's true as well.
Too soon to Mikey's butt anything
Mikey,
else.
Why you gotta fuck this
I'm
up
I'm sorry, but like my Instagram hasn't been pulled down and it's on mine.
Like your Instagram's blowing up.
I feel like it might be our rival podcast, like share and retweet. Oh. Reporting.
Shade of it all.
And so it's another week and I'm here with our regular hosts.
Here we go.
And first up we have Kyle.
Why me?
The human equivalent of when you put all of your skill points into attractiveness and nothing else. RPG. You're like a Mass Effect character I want to fuck, but not play.
Mass Effect is my favorite game ever.
Next up, we have the queen that's so bad at reading us, she might as well be illiterate. It's Mikey.
Oh, thank you.
That was great.
Thank you. And then last but not least, we have the comedy equivalent of always the bridesmaid, but never the bride. Thomas Jaspers.
Fuck you. But also, I don't know if you know this, but I literally had a comedy festival show called Always the Bridesmaid 4 years ago.
There we go.
Glad Luke intro'd us this week.
But fuck you for knowing all my problems and insecurities.
Yeah, and then there's me, the nice one, Luke.
Oh, yeah. Said nobody ever.
So nice.
Hi, everybody. How's our week been?
Good.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Haven't found any needles in any strawberries, so it's pretty exciting.
But our beautiful Thomas has baked for us this week.
I have.
We all have some very nicely colored lemon meringue in front
That's
of
right. That's well, delicious. We're going to be talking about Bisexuality Visibility Day, which happened last Sunday. So I thought I'd bake a little lemon meringue pie, and I thought I'd color it in the colors of the bisexual flag. And I'm glad that this is a podcast where you can't see what things look like, because I feel like I would have caused a lot of offense to the bisexual community had they have seen the way that I was trying to support them.
It tastes delicious, though. So
it's a rustic lemon meringue pie. Mm.
Bisexuality is a really interesting space within the LGBTQIA+ community, and I feel like they have experienced a bit of a rough ride. You know, I actually found it really interesting that Bi Visibility Day originated in South Africa.
Really?
Yeah.
You're welcome.
The first ever one.
That's cool.
But it's something we've been really close to. There's a lot of stuff going on there. Bisexuality has always kind of fascinated me. I've dated a couple of bisexual people.
Oh, yeah, we mentioned before, I remember.
Yeah, and it was probably the strangest relationship I've ever been in because it was open, polyamorous, with a bisexual man. It was hard to process because nothing made sense to me in that relationship, and they were also quite attractive.
That's the weirdest part for me.
Yeah, no. How did that happen?
Wow.
Attractive.
But I'd be completely honest, I did have to check myself a few times because I grew up in a day and age before, you know, some more political correct movements had started, before online Twitter and being able to interact with people that identified as that. The first few relationships I did have with bisexual people, I have to admit, in my head, I was like, you were just gay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You were gay and you were dating me. Mm-hmm. And bisexuality is some sort of safety blanket term for, you know, your own insecurities. Mm-hmm. And after wading into that pool a few times, I realized that that is actually not the case. It is a legitimate orientation and sexuality. Yeah,
absolutely.
And these people left me for women. Yeah. You know, almost every single time. But it made me realize that bi erasure is a real thing.
Yeah, no, totally. Nobody ever thinks it's a real thing. They think it's just like an excuse or like a cheap way of saying I'm gay, but like they're too cowardly to say it.
And I found it interesting that it was so insidious in that it wasn't a sort of prejudice that had been instilled in me through any sort of propaganda. You don't really see anti-bisexual propaganda out there.
No, yeah.
It was kind of something innate from my own insecurities as a gay man that fostered itself into bi erasure in my adult years that I really had to check and really had to investigate and learn a bit more about and ultimately apologize for on this show.
You're right. It is interesting how many people don't believe that bisexuality is a real thing. And what's really disappointing about it is the amount of queer people, especially gay men, who are happy to brush it off as like, oh, darling, you're not quite 100%. Ready yet to be fully gay.
Yeah.
Personally, my experience of discovering my sexuality as a gay man, especially when I was a kid, Luke as well, went in the black and white days.
The black and white days. And,
we didn't get to see many gay people on television. Like, that wasn't really something that you saw very often. And if they were, they were often the sidekick or whatever. So we just assumed that we were straight. I was in a straight school. Everybody I knew was straight. Everything I saw on television was straight. Everything was straight. So before becoming sexually aware and sexually active, I just assumed that I was straight.
Yeah.
When I did start becoming sexually active, it was initially with women because that's what I always planned that I was going to do one day. And then eventually I realized I was attracted to men and started sleeping with men as well. And there was a period of time where I believed that I was bisexual. And I don't know, maybe I was for that period of time. Mm. And then eventually realized that I was gay. And a lot of people, when I did believe that I was bisexual, were having a go at me and saying, well, no, you're just gay and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it turned out that they were correct. Now, what I think it is that a lot of gay men go through that and then go, well, that was my experience, so it must be everyone else's experience. So anyone else that's currently identified as bisexual is struggling to come to terms with them being homosexual. And it's actually not the case. Mm. And it's really disappointing to see people in our community judging other people in our community for their sexuality.
Because it's so widespread is the thing, is like a lot of us have had that experience and it, within the LGBT.
Yeah, I don't feel like, I feel like the LGBTI community is a lot worse at it than the heterosexual community is. Like, heterosexual people accept that bisexuality exists and is real and a valid thing. And I feel like a lot of queer people don't.
I didn't for a very long time. Like, when I was coming out, I was just like, you know what? I'm bisexual. That's what it is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, that's totally. And then, like, I think I sort of used it as, like, a test the waters sort of situation. Mm. And then when that went fine, it was just like, I'm comfortable in this. Like, let's explore further and realize that I was gay. A little bit later.
So gay.
Yeah, very gay.
Gay as hell.
And in my teen years, I dated a bisexual guy. It was super, super lovely. Mm. That ended and he ended up leaving me for a woman. But I was 100% sure that, like, no, like, you're gay. That's what it is. Yeah. Because, like, that was my experience. Like, I can't say that his experience is the same as mine whatsoever.
No, and you would hope that people like us that have had other people's experiences and perspectives forced upon us for so long would be able to acknowledge when that's happening to somebody else, but we don't.
People assume that bisexual people are just attracted to everybody. And it's like the same thing, and like us gay people judge them for it as well. Like, people assume that gay people are like, oh, you must just love all men. So, but like, gay people will judge bisexual people for the same thing. Be like, oh, you must be attracted to everybody. Also, when I was on like dating apps, do you guys feel that people would say that they were bisexual?
That's a really good point.
Because
actually,
they think that maybe that comes off as more masculine and more attractive to people. So like, oh, bi mask guy here, because then that's not fully committing to being gay. Like, I think there's a lot of people who faked it.
That is, I know people that have done that.
Yeah,
that is a thing that happens. Which then, you know,
it plays into the issues that we're talking about.
It's like, it's all mixed up.
No, but I also feel like it cheapens isn't the right word, but also
it muddies the waters.
It muddies the waters and stuff. And for people who are bisexual on those apps are now going to start having people doubt them because there's other people pretending to be because of this shitty toxic masculinity thing that we have going on, that we're pretending that we all are more masked than we are.
Yeah, I remember when I was first coming to terms with sexuality, like MySpace and stuff, and I remember you could identify on MySpace for what your sexuality was, and I remember for like a week I put bi and I was like just seeing what happened and
yeah,
like
the reaction.
You could search people that way, and then I think I went back to like just not having anything appear.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like a way for a lot of gay people to like ease into it, but cause a lot of problems.
It's important to point out though that at the time you're not, or at least
for you're me, not like 100% sure of your own sexuality.
You are genuinely believing that that's where you are, and then later on you realize that, oh like, no, that was me just realizing.
Yeah, hope.
I think the key thing is something I've even taken away from being on this show and the people listening to the show as well, is that your experience as a gay man, or not even just gay, but a part of the LGBTQIA plus community, is so exclusive to you and you alone, because oftentimes for the start of our journey, we're walking that pathway by ourselves.
Yeah.
And it means that it doesn't necessarily equate to every other person. Tom and I disagree on things. Mikey and I disagree on things. Kyle and I certainly do disagree
on
things.
Me.
And the show for me at least has been a real awakening of that, how I feel about my experience is not the be all end all of gay experience. I think that's what's happening with our tiptoes into bisexuality, then leading into our lives as homosexual men. Obviously we have all come to the realization that there is such a thing as bisexuality, but as a broader community, maybe that's something that needs to be promoted more, and a message that's spoken a bit louder.
Absolutely, considering that bisexual people and pansexual people are the biggest group in our community compared to gays,
swept
and
under
lesbians.
The rug a lot. Totally. Like it's all focused on the other stuff,
and they're the least represented in our entire community,
except for subplots in Neighbours where the characters try to be gay for a few weeks.
It's a phase.
And it's cool that now, because like we had Joel Creasy on the show talking about dating shows and stuff, that like Courtney Act has brought forward a dating show about bisexual and pan people and everybody under the umbrella of bisexuality.
Yeah. I don't care for Courtney Act.
You leave Courtney alone.
No, I think it's really cool that they're bringing it forward.
Like that's pretty progressive.
Yeah. Like making it more visible for everybody else and really educating everybody on what bisexuality is.
The worst Tinder experience I ever had was with a bisexual man.
Oh, then just cancel everything we've said.
Yes, okay.
Fuck bisexual people.
No, literally, fuck them.
Luke had a bad experience with a bisexual
cancel
person.
Cancel
them all. Tell us, Luke.
Oh, that's been cancelled. It's over.
For me personally, because of my oodles and oodles of personal anxiety and self-confidence issues, I matched with someone on Tinder. We hit it off like immediately because this person was studying psychology. Also like live streamed Pokemon. I was like, this is a dream match.
Yes.
And so obviously I went and Facebook stalked this person like any sane person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any
sane person would.
And all I could see was engagement photos and photos of him with this woman. They were very recent. It was within like a few months of me matching on Tinder. He had been engaged to this woman. And I don't think I brought it up in conversation, but I definitely controlled the conversation to lead it to that point. He told me that he was bisexual and that he was exploring that side of his sexuality, which was all for because it lowers the standards of my performance emotionally, romantically.
Wait, so did his like fiancé know that he was exploring this?
They were no longer together.
Okay, cool.
So we would text up a storm, hours a day, just talk about our thoughts about psychology and the different aspects of that. I think he came to my work once. We never actually even had a single official date because it was after about 2 months, the longest play I've ever done on any sort of dating app.
Yeah.
He messaged me and said, look, I just don't think this is actually for me.
Okay.
I'm going to just delete the app and go about my way.
Yeah.
So that did actually color my feelings. But then I dated two other bisexual people post that.
You've had a lot of experience with bisexual people.
A lot of my friends are bisexual too and identify as bisexual.
Well, if you keep drilling, you're bound to hit oil.
Oh. Yeah. Thomas is
classic
famous phrase.
As many people episode as Luke one. Has.
Oh my gosh.
My absolute favorite TV show yes. of all damn time Shut. Came back yep. last year.
Oh my God.
You have no idea how excited I was.
Yay.
Will and Grace.
Yes. Oh, I'm so happy you said that.
I love the show so much. So like my first year of doing hairdressing as an apprentice for my birthday, the salon that I worked at knew how much I loved the show that they bought the entire box set for my birthday. No. And I cried in the middle of the salon and I was like, oh my God, you so guys. Good. Like so good. And so when they made the revival, I was just like, let's do this. And when I watched it, I thought it was super political.
Yes.
And I was just like, what is going on? Like, what's happening?
Didn't it start off because they had a political snippet, vote Hillary or something? Yeah. And then that got such good press and everything. So, and then they made like, they're like, oh, people want this.
People want this back. And then, totally. Fuck yeah, they and the, like the producers were just like, yeah, sure, let's do this. And they got all the original cast, all the original like backstage people, all the original producers, everybody came back to do it. So it was so exciting. Mm.
They killed Rosario.
Oh my God, this episode was heartbreaking.
Sorry, I just had to like,
not old. Rosario's the maid.
Shut up, Luke. Luke that doesn't I can't know. Believe I gay culture.
I didn't say anything.
But no, like when it came back, I thought it was just like, wow, this is like super political. What's going on? Like, I love that they're taking on all these like really great topics that's happening in America at the moment. Like what's happening with Trump and they went into gay conversion therapy and stuff. Yes. But like, it's really heavy topics that you're talking about.
I guess
about.
It's a sitcom for 2018.
That's it. And like, I decided to go back and watch old Will and Grace from like first, second, third season. Because I watched it after the show had finished. Like, I wasn't watching it at the time because I was too young.
Because you were 12, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. I realized what they were doing on the show then was actually really political for its time.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Rewatching, I think it's season two, when Jack and Will kiss on daytime TV. And realizing that's the first gay kiss that you see in the entire series. Mm. That's a statement in itself for when it came out. And so then rewatching the new season again, I was just like, it's just as political as always.
I'm not a fan of the show, but something that always bothered me about the show was that there was not a gay kiss until the final episode or like the mid-season of the second season. And I'm not sure if my memory's hazy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to need my black and white.
No pun intended. Sean Hayes being one of the main actors.
professional. Yeah, you'll have to corroborate or deny, but I remember we've talked about it in I think our first episode, watching Queer as Folk at the same time as Will and Grace, and just not having any interest in Will and Grace because maybe I was watching it for another reason. Or
there was no softcore porn in Will and Grace
I think it's sort of apples and oranges though, Dole. Like, I think what was amazing about Will and Grace was that was primetime television on that started just after The Nanny, that sort of that time slot
like
of show.
Friends.
Wow. So it was kind of amazing that it was a dinner time sitcom for the family to sit down and watch that was about gay men. Yeah. And you know, you do watch old episodes now and there are some episodes that are quite problematic.
Oh, absolutely.
When you look at it from 2018, although I will say it holds up better than most shows from the late 90s, early 90s.
I used to watch it when it was actually on TV with my family. Like, it wasn't even a thing. Like, maybe I was too young to realize what the themes of the show and everything. Maybe I didn't even know what gay people were at the time. But I just remember it just being a really funny show that I liked.
Yeah.
It holds up for me completely. There's not a day it goes by.
Yeah, I mean, what I mean by it, there is some problematic elements to it. It was a very white show. But I guess at the time, it was like, if you went to a producer and said, hey, I want to make a show and it's going to have gay people and people of
like
color
baby steps.
At that time, it would not have been made. We sort of got to look at it. And it's what I call the John Inman conundrum. It's probably got a real name, but that's what I call it. Uh-huh. Have you ever seen Are You Being Served, the old British sitcom?
I know the name, but I don't
know. Yeah, so it was in a shop, it was British, and there was a very camp gay character on the show called Mr. Humphreys, and was played by
I think I've heard you talk about John Inman before.
I find it quite fascinating how people look back at him portraying that character on that show at that time, especially people in the queer community, because a lot of people say that sort of character was just pushing stereotypes and that sort of thing. Yeah. And a lot of other people, and I agree with the other people, say, well, no, we needed to have that character on television first. So then we could, you know, the next character could come along and be a little bit more developed and more real and more real and more real and that sort of thing. So it's sort of the path that was taken, I guess. And when and Grace, the original series, is part of that. The new series, I think, is
it's very diverse. A lot of those.
Yeah,
like that's the thing, and it's casting. Yeah, like, it shows different.
But also
types.
The topics. It's well, the topic. About. Yeah, I mean, the original Will and Grace. People are now slamming. You know, there's a whole lot of articles recently about it not addressing the HIV epidemic. Which for me, it's like, well, that was a dinner time sitcom. You know, the nanny wasn't looking at breast cancer.
It's
or
a comedy sitcom.
Yeah, it was a comedy sitcom.
Like, why would they bring it so?
Yeah, it was made for the masses.
It was. Yeah, and also it's sitcoms don't dwell on the worst part of stuff. That's why there are shows like
Queer as Folk
and that sort of thing. You know?
It was non-sexual introduction of gay men into mainstream media.
Easing everybody.
Whereas like everything with gay people is sexualized. And like it was, even Will's character is very asexual for the first couple seasons. Like, doesn't have a relationship, has a lot of internalized homophobia. That reflects on to Jack as well, because he's a very flamboyant, like, and that's where their sort of banter comes from. They're the two main stereotypes they push forward first. And now in their new series, like, Will is a lot more comfortable in his own sexuality. Jack is more accepted as a more flamboyant gay person, but then they also have all different types of gay people in the cast now, which is fantastic.
I feel to an extent they're trying to course correct with some hindsight things that queer people of our age would appreciate in a sitcom. I know I'm a picky person, and if it's not pushing my buttons or I can't jerk off to it, I don't want to watch it.
He ironically has to have his buttons pushed to be able to jerk
to
off.
Activate. I saw that one coming. But I think my big thing is I hate that neutering of a gay man.
But do you, you know, you look at any sitcom from that era, I mean, even now, like, no one's fucking on the Big Bang Theory. You know,
I wish they would. Maybe I'd watch.
And I'm not, look, I don't, I'm not obsessed with Will and Grace. Please, I don't love it as much as Mikey does. But I think that the show did a wonderful thing by bringing gay people to that format.
It's like exposure.
And
Yeah, you still can't jack off to it.
You can't jack off.
You can't jack off to it. Oh, no, that's not true.
Debatable.
I would jack off to Megan Mullally.
I was going to say Karen. Oh,
8 days out of seven. Yeah, absolutely.
I love her.
I also love that she's married to Nick Offerman.
They are the coolest couple ever. So I follow them on Instagram, like, avidly.
They
like
Ron Swanson
and fucking Karen, the best.
They tour together and they sing together.
They're the coolest couple. Love them so much.
It's funny we talk about Karen, because Karen is one of the characters I actually did love. Like in that show, because it was a broadly painted caricature that didn't personally affect me as an like, it wasn't representing me. Because just as an aside, like, growing up in school, the amount of like just Jack jokes I got and things like that, it in my mindset perpetrated a negative thing towards me and within the community about campness, which is a whole nother topic.
Yeah,
Karen, I adore as a character and the way she's written and played and. What's her name? Megan Mullally. I can never... Yeah. It's got too many L's and N's next to each other. But her character is on Parks and Rec.
Tammy 2, I think.
Tammy 2 is great. Yeah. And it's played with such reckless abandon and such obnoxious incoherence that I realize that I'm being hypocritical when I overlook the racially insensitive jokes that Karen makes while getting huffed and puffed about the jokes made at the expense of more flamboyant members of our community.
Yeah, right.
By Will. So I don't know what that is. I don't know how you feel about that, Mike.
Yeah, I don't know. It never really affected me, I think, negatively. Like, I knew that what she was saying was fucked up.
But, like, it's not just like she's portrayed to be an amazing good person. Like, they all pay her out. They're like, she's the bad lady who's, like, racist and everything. And they're like, don't tolerate it.
Yeah, totally. Like,
she's that character.
It's more laughing at her being a shit person than the jokes actually being told.
Yeah.
Just because the way that she presents them is in such a hilarious comedic way that that's not someone that I would ever resonate with.
Yeah, you're
with,
laughing at rich, white, spoiled housewives who think this stuff, because the jokes aren't actually funny in their racist context. They're funny in that, oh, that there are shit people like this in the world.
Isn't it totally. Like in the newer season, she's like a big Trump supporter and she always talks being friends with Melania and everything. It's like, I feel like the whole audience of Will and Grace are not going to be Trump supporters.
No,
like she's portrayed as this big hero.
A good person.
Like,
and they call her out on the show.
And they call her out all the time.
Constantly.
Yeah. But it's like comedy. It's like funny. Yeah. My workplace involves a lot of looking at wedding photos.
Mm. You would at a wedding photo editing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's not specifically wedding editing.
Oh,
it's,
right.
It's a bit just like mostly 99% of it is wedding. Mm-hmm. But today I was going through a gay wedding from New York. They had children and it was really cute. And then it got us all talking at work. There's another gay guy at my work and we're talking about gay people having children. For me, I've never wanted kids ever.
Yeah. Which is good because you'd be really awful.
Yeah, I think I would be. I mean, I'd nailed the dad jokes, but I can barely look after myself. And the thought of like looking after someone else, like, holy shit.
And if you can't love yourself, how are you going to love anybody else?
We're talking about how hard it is gay people having to adopt and everything like that. Certain people just have babies by accident. They're just like, there's too many like people just like.
Instagram.
Sorry?
Your miracle baby friend on Instagram.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
She accidentally had a baby.
So we were talking. Yeah, sorry. You know, there's people that you just are very dramatic and you keep them on your social media just because their life is constant entertainment. Well, there's a girl I went to school with back in South Africa and she had a baby and she didn't
even know.
She didn't even know she was pregnant.
I love those stories. It's
I was like,
favorite.
How did you know? Sorry, that was like a side story, but I'm like, how did you not know?
Yeah, no.
And she always refers to her as her miracle baby.
Yeah.
We'll tag her in the comments.
Oh, please don't.
Not a miracle, darling.
Did she name it Miracle?
No. That'd be funny. Can you imagine? We were discussing in an earlier episode how gay people have to get used to this idea of being able to get married. Mm. And like, I'm open to the idea of maybe my mind changing one day and maybe all of a sudden I'll decide I really want kids. Don't know why.
Yeah.
I guess there's pressure from parents. Like, because with me, my brother and I were both gay.
You're the only two
children. So we have different dads. Yeah. But then my dad would always make side comments and jokes, be like, oh, I guess the Dowsett bloodline ends with you. Mm. I was like, oh, cool. No pressure. That's
again,
fine.
Probably a good thing. You know,
probably good. No, it's not been a good run up till now. And then I was thinking about how funny it is that gay people love to get dogs and like worship them as their children.
Yeah.
And how funny that is. You always see these like really muscled up guys and they have these like tiny little like dash hounds or something.
Yeah.
And they're like obsessed with them. And they push them. No, it's funny. Then today I forgot when I was drinking with you before we came here. I was like, oh shit, you have a dash hound.
I do have a dash hound. And I'm
very
really
gay stereotypical. Yeah.
Thank God this is a podcast.
Do you guys think that gay guys' dogs are totally a substitute for children and they like to worship them?
I think
some cases.
In some cases.
Also, straight people have dogs as well.
Yeah. An exclusively.
It's like a warm up. I think it's a warm up.
But I think like a
warm
up.
I think in a lot of, for a lot of people, it's a warm up to having kids. It is interesting though, the whole family thing. Growing up, I was adamant that I was going to have kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah. After I'd come out, I was certain I was going to find a man, get married, be happy, have kids, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. I still would really like to find a soulmate. I would like to have a wedding. But I have, in the last couple of years, sort of started realizing maybe I don't need to have a baby. Yeah. And I think it's because my brother and his partner had their first child on my 30th birthday.
That's right.
Named him.
That's like, way to
take
the
spotlight. I was like, where the fuck are they? And Mum was like, oh, they're at the hospital, but they didn't want to tell you because I didn't want you to miss your party. And he's named after me also. I just want to mention that. And watching the changes that they've had to go through in their life to have a child. Or to look after a human being, but they planned the baby and everything. Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't like it was a huge surprise, but there's still huge changes in your life that you have to go through to have a child. I now look at that and go, you know what? I don't know that I would be good at that.
Yes.
And I also don't need it. And also because I've got this nephew now that I can dote over and hang out with and
I'm
give back to his parents.
And you have a dash hound.
And I have a dash hound. And when I say changes, I mean things like, you know, he and his partner were both, and still are, very social people, but it now means they can't go out much at all.
There's a lot more restrictions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Financially, it's obviously a huge burden. Yeah. And also just the constant fear. I mean, we joked about it, but I have a dash hound. I am constantly thinking, have I fed him? Yeah. Has he been walked today? If I'm going to go out, you know, I've got to make sure a housemate's home too.
I mean, imagine he could talk and had hands.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I actually had that dream the other day. And it was creepy.
Well, that sounds like a terrifying
but, creature. Imagine that being a human being. Like, that's their lives now for at least 18,
like
20
that
years.
That kind of pressure that you are influencing this human being and like, that is so scary.
I admire my brother and his partner so much because they are so committed and they are so happy to their lives about this beautiful child now. And they're not annoyed. Like when I say they're making their lives about it, they're not posting constantly on Instagram or Facebook or doing this fucking like, oh, he did his first solid shit. Oh, so cute. They're not those pieces of shit kind of people, but they do have to now dedicate their lives to it and they want to make sure they do the best job that they can. And I look look at that and I think, well, you know, I've got a very social life. Mm. I have a career that means that I'm out at night doing shows and things like that. I would have to say goodbye to a lot of that if I was to have a child. Mm. So I'm not saying that I definitely don't want one anymore, but I would have to be in a relationship with the absolute the right person who really wanted to do it. And I would want to make sure that we were financially ready to do it and that sort of
thing.
That's
another thing, being financially stable enough.
There are a lot of people that bring children into the world.
Yeah. The thing that terrifies me most about bringing children into the world is not just that they have hands and they can talk.
Hands are terrifying.
But also that eventually they're going to grow up and vote and have some impact and their values and what they bring into the world essentially from that formative stage come from you. That's and my values are fucked.
You can fuck up so easily.
They're fucked. So for ages growing up, I always kind of thought, you know, when it comes to having gay babies and gay families, I'm going to leave that to the lesbians because they know what they're doing.
They are very good at it.
And that's, you know, they can do that.
Yeah.
But I'm also very interested in science and technology. Mm. Okay. So for me, the idea of like, I'd probably be ready to have a child when technology is caught up to the point where it can be some
like
sort
both of your DNA kind of thing.
Like make a sim, you know, when you play The Sims and you get to pick the eye shape and craft a baby.
That's creepy. Yeah. Like when genetic, like genetic engineering. Like I've already read articles about that when people like, you can choose what DNA and stuff will go into your kid.
Yeah, totally. That's when I'd be more on board.
Well, the DNA that's going into the kid is whatever your DNA you're leaving behind.
until that point, I'm not super invested in the idea. And a friend did point out that all the like hand-picked child names that I had, they were more dog names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Missile.
That's how my dash hound Albert got his name.
Yeah. More gay people need to have children so there's not so many fucking stupid names out there. Yeah. Like,
we're going to have a lot of...
There might be more stupid names.
We're going to have like, you remember like when we were kids?
Baby Gaga.
Yeah. When we were kids and we were at primary school, I was like, oh, Jessica A and Jessica D and we're going to have like Bet A Betty and Liza Betty. M. Liza
C. We're going to have entire classes of children named after queens from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, my God. You know
those better names. Balintina.
Jinx is on detention in the corner. Yeah. Troye Sivan is staying back after school.
Ariana Grande is here.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So I'm happy to put a pin in it for the time being.
Yeah.
It's nice to have the option. It's not compulsory. Yeah. None of us have to have children. A conversation I've had with a lot of partners when we do talk about potential family things is like, what part of you were you passing on? Like, you know,
I think it was all the bad parts.
We've all probably had those late night conversations where you go, I definitely have, you know, Mikey's eyes and his eyebrows.
I mean, who would you?
But keep my hair and you pick and choose parts because I think there is a narcissistic streak inherently in having children.
Yeah.
In that we want to pass on something that we admire and take pride in ourselves and see that continue on. So
we have all had those conversations, although when you say it, I feel it's more like Silence of the Lambs when you're saying it.
Yeah, it's more like Hello Clarice.
Because I'm literally going to take it.
Do you think Beyonce's really upset that her kid looks exactly like Jay-Z?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. I was actually just talking about... Are you talking about Blue Ivy?
Yeah.
Does she look like Jay-Z?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Doesn't look like Beyonce. Yeah. It's
shaded a baby. We hit a new
shady
low.
Baby. Yep.
No, growing up, my thing was like, I want the white picket fence and I want the baby and I want the relationship and the like the pets and stuff. And that was all great. And then realizing that I'm a homo set that in place for me to be like, I don't think this is an option for me at this point in time. And I don't know if it's ever going to be an option for me in society where it was at the time. I completely put that on the back shelf and I was just like, nah, not something for me. Don't want to do it. And I'm from a big family. I'm one of eight kids. I've seen half my siblings have children at young ages as well and seen the struggles that they went through being teen to young adult parents.
Yeah.
And seeing how much they had to put aside to, like, have their children, which they were more than happy to. And, like, that was their choice to do so. In saying that, watching them not be able to be social and not be able to continue their careers or not be able to finish schooling because a lot of the cases, unfortunately, they were accident children.
A whoopsie baby.
But, like, that doesn't mean that they don't love them 100% and that we all don't embrace them as our family. Like, they're amazing, amazing children. I wouldn't change a thing. For me personally, I was just like,
Not for you, girl.
Not for me. Not happening. I enjoy being a gunkle. It's fantastic. I hang out with them and I give them back. And then when the yes vote came through, something in my mind switched. Like, the option's there now.
Yeah.
Like, I can get married. Like, I always thought it'd be fantastic to have my own children, like, blood-related, have my own DNA within them. But then I thought about all the other children in the world that don't have families.
Yeah.
And the amount of kids that I went to school with that were in the foster care system, I would rather adopt at this point. And now that I'm in a quite serious relationship with my partner, it's my first adult relationship. We've spoken about it, like having children and getting married and stuff and what we want for our future. And we've decided that, fingers crossed, fingers crossed, that we get to that point that we will 100% adopt.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And like, that's the path that we want to take going forward. May that be 5 years from now, 10 or 15 years, who knows? But we also both decided that we need to get a pet first.
Smart, dash out. Just interestingly, Kyle and Mikey, you both have mentioned that, you know, now that marriage equality has passed, it's easier to have a family. Nothing, as far as I'm aware, has legally changed to make it easier for us get a baby in Australia. And I'm not having a go or anything. But it is an interesting thing because mentally, we now think it too. Yeah. Now that I can get married, I can have families.
Yeah.
Gay couples could adopt in Australia prior to marriage equality being legalized. And as far as I'm aware, nothing has changed to make it easier for married couples to adopt.
You have to plan, post. Like, way
but
in
it
advance,
isn't it interesting how the our mentality about it has changed since the marriage equality vote.
Yeah.
I often look at straight people having babies and I think, do you really
want... Is that what you wanted?
Yeah. I feel like they've got this reverse kind of sexuality assumptions being made about them in that they often, I feel like, have babies because that's what they're supposed to do. You know, you go to school, you get a good job, you find the good person, you have a baby, and that's your responsibility to do. I'm glad we don't have that responsibility. And that's why the right wing want us to believe that gay people shouldn't adopt because the kids are disadvantaged. Pretty much every study that's ever been done shows that children of gay people advance at everything because they have had to plan so hard and work so hard to get that child that they put everything they possibly can into that child. Whereas a lot of, a lot of heterosexual people either have them by accident or because they feel they have to have a baby. But whilst the four of us aren't really down at the IVF clinic, it is kind of beautiful to see.
I am, but for different reasons.
Whoa, clean it up. Like,
oh, I hope you're making deposits. Oh, goodness. You know, it is really beautiful to see rainbow families happening. I mean, rainbow families as a phrase was something that we'd never heard of 20 years ago. And you go to Midsummer now, which is the Gay Pride Festival in Melbourne, and on Carnival Day, they have like a little kindergarten creche area set up. Yeah, it is beautiful. It's actually how my ex and I met. We were both like hanging out, playing with these lesbians' kids, and we met and got chatting. It was very romantic. But how amazing that we have that. There's also an Instagram, one of my favorite Instagrams, The Real Dads of Melbourne. Do you guys follow that?
Oh, no.
Beautiful couple, I would say slightly older than Luke and I, with their son, who's adopted from overseas, and beautiful, beautiful family. And there is just so much love for him. And you can just see in every single video and photo and stuff that they post, their lives just made by having their son. I highly recommend following them if any listeners want to. The_real_dads_of_Melbourne
Okay.
on Instagram. They've got like 100,000 followers. They're doing very well.
The lesbian babies I know are incredible. And the rainbow families in our community, Thornbury has a lot of family-orientated LGBT people. Mm. And it's great to be able to see that. And I can see they're doing it so well. And it's true, those babies do statistically do better in most areas than heterosexual babies. I'm just going to make that broad stroke right.
But it's true. Like, you know. I'll post studies in the group to prove it, you know.
Yeah,
if
but
if you want to check my references.
Why don't the lesbians and gays team up? That's what I want to know. They could make babies together without all the hoo-ha.
I think that's
get a turkey baster and you're good.
You sound like everybody I work with.
So if we had like a Sims DNA mixer, if you had to take DNA from the four of us to make a
fun. Okay.
What would you take from each?
Can I go
first?
What would you take?
Oh. Tom first.
Okay. I would take Kyle's outer shell.
Outer shell.
I would take everything on the outside. I would have Kyle's looks. I'd have Mikey's heart and soul. I would have my smarts. Oh. And I would have Luke deliver the baby.
Yes.
All right.
Wow. Wow. Oh,
goodness. If I were to have a boy, I would take Luke's moustache because it is fantastic.
It is a very nice
moustache. It's just nice and full. And like,
although it would be a little bit weird if your baby came out with a full moustache.
A moustache, your question.
Yeah, it is. No, I'd have Thomas's eyes because they're beautiful.
And stop it a minute.
And I'd have Kyle's lovely awkwardness because it's super cute.
I'm not awkward. You're awkward.
And just my personality. Just me.
Smart. So, you know what you've got.
I would have Mikey's amazing voice.
That's a good call.
Yeah, fuck you. That's mine. You can't have. I would have Luke's really good hair. You've got great hair.
Thank you.
I'd have Thomas's wit.
Did he say weight? Does he want? I have been working on
it. And I'd have my surname. Yeah. What about you, Luke?
I don't have to do it because I asked a question.
You have to do it.
Games worked.
What a cop out.
I would take Kyle's eyes, I think.
Aww.
I would definitely take a lot from Mikey.
Definitely his dick. We all saw that. I know it's weird to think about your child's dick, but...
No, Luke's already taken Mikey's
dick. And this might be a good evidence as to why we don't need to have children, but Mikey has such a lovely
thank
dick.
You.
Yeah.
We all saw it a few episodes ago.
Luke's already taken that.
And then I'd have Tom's hair.
Oh, thank you. Well, enjoy it while you can, because it's going to go pretty soon.
Maybe that's what I like about it, is it's like a fleeting
moment. You know I'm
going
to mention it soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I want to talk to you guys about a topic that we haven't actually touched on. I'm kind of surprised we haven't touched on it on the show. And I haven't actually talked to any of you about this off the show either. So I'm really keen to hear your thoughts on this topic. And it is chemsex. Also known in Australia, it's both known as chemsex and PNP. In the States, it's PNP. And in the UK, it's chemsex.
I always thought PNP was like piss and play.
No, party and play. You're thinking,
I always thought it was puff and play.
Or puff and play. Okay, it's also puff and play. But party and play sort of includes things that you don't have.
Okay, yeah.
One thing I'd like to say before we talk about this is for anyone that's listening that is engaged in chemsex or uses any of the drugs that we're talking about, when I talk about disdain for chemsex, it is nothing to do with the individual. I don't hate you. I don't think you're a bad person. There is nothing different between you and me except that you tried something that you got addicted to that I haven't tried. So if anything, you're a stronger person than I am if you are someone that lives through that. So please don't think when I talk about my disdain for that scene, I'm talking about you. It's the addiction and the things that you go through that I don't like. Also, for anyone listening that's not aware of what chemsex or party and play is, it is, in the context of the way that we're talking about it, it is gay men using drugs to feel hornier, to go for longer, to get certain feelings out of it, which we'll talk about. And generally speaking, it's using drugs like G, crystal meth, and heroin are probably the main ones that are used for party and play. So, I don't know. Do any of you engage in the scene?
No, it's not something that I think that I'll ever delve into because one of my family members in the past has had an issue with methamphetamines. to the point where he was quite physically violent with a few of us, and we thankfully have family that took him in Tasmania and helped him rehabilitate. But that was sort of the defining moment for me, that I was just like, this sort of stuff isn't for me. Like, I've seen it at that really horrific level in my personal life that I'm just like, it's not something that I want to go into ever. He was 15.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and it was introduced by a friend. And the last time I had seen him before he went away, he attacked me. Mm. And, like, I was on the ground and he was just screaming faggot in my face. And it was the hardest thing for me, being like, my youngest brother is doing this. Like, what's going on? And then it was probably a year later into his rehabilitation that I saw him again, and I was terrified. I was just like, I don't know what's going to happen. So I'd gone to Tasmania to see him, and one of my other siblings was there as well. And I got out of the car, and all I saw was him piss bolt at me.
Oh, shit.
And I shit myself, and I was just like, oh my God, it's going to happen again. And he hugged me.
Oh.
And started crying profusely, saying, I'm so sorry for everything that, like, I put you through, and, like, with, like, the whole family, and I never ever want to do that to any of you again. Like, that was horrible. And that's what my experience with those sort of drugs has been. And it's just like, it's not something that I want to go into in my sexual life or, like, social life.
I come at those drugs from a similar perspective. It's something that I purposely have made a conscious decision to try to do my best to avoid, because I have seen people, strong people, partake in it. And, you know, the gay scene is about partying and, and drinking a lot and doing coke and doing ecstasy and MDMA and speed and ketamine and that sort of stuff. So I can't blame anybody that wants to try something else that's outside of those things, because, you know, he was 15 years old.
That's
you
it.
Know, you would just think, oh, that's just another thing I can try. But unfortunately, these things can become very addictive. And that's because of the way that they make you feel when you're having sex, it's a hard thing to give up. The reason I wanted to talk about it is I've got a very good friend of mine who's only in his mid-20s, who for the last 5 years, he has been trying to get out of the chemsex scene. And so we've had every 5 months or so, he'll pull himself out of it and we'll plan weekends so that he has something to do. And, you know, we'll go out to a bar where we know that none of his friends from the scene will be, or we'll sit on the couch and watch movies and that sort of thing. And then we'll make plans for the next weekend, and then his phone will be lost, or he wasn't able to reply, and you know, he's back on it that weekend, and then I won't be able to really get in touch with him properly. It'll be a couple of Facebook messages here and there for a few weeks or a month or so. And as soon as he's off it, he hates himself for doing it. He wishes that he hadn't done it. He'll tell me the most awful stories. He's told me some fucking heartbreaking stories. This guy's 25 years old. In preparation for this, I spoke to him about it and was like, you know, we've talked about chemsex a lot when you're going through the withdrawal and stuff, but whilst you're, because he's currently off it, I was like, can I ask you some just really full-on blunt questions? And he said, I said, what are some of the scariest things that have ever happened to you? He said he's got memories of going to clubs, going back to guys' places, taking a whole lot of G and smoking ice, and his next conscious thought, he's at a different house from where he was, has no idea who's been fucking him. And this is pre-prep days as well. So had no idea of his HIV status. And he said when he wakes up from that euphoria, he feels like he's a sack of shit. So we'll have more to get rid of that feeling of, I don't know who's fucked me. I don't know who's done what to me. But there's got to be a reason that people keep going back to it, I think.
Yeah. Working in the mental health sector and being in an LGBT community, we have a lot of clients that have dealt with this. And it's a really important conversation to be having now, because although there are heterosexual couples that partake in chemsex, it is kind of a uniquely LGBT problem. So it's a conversation we need to be having with each other and with our community. And it's a problem that we need to really understand and figure out some positive approaches to, because it affects us and it's our community that's dealing with it. I can completely understand. And, you know, my brother has had a lot of issues with methamphetamines and ice. I know I'm quite lucky that I missed the boat with being offered those kind of drugs, because when you mix something like being ostracized from your community, a lot of self-loathing, anxiety and depression, and a lot of the mental health issues that members of our community experience and struggle with, and then offer them drugs and some really ecstatic drugs as well. It's a perfect storm. And then tie it in with sex, one of the most prominent parts of our culture. As gay men, we enjoy sex and we celebrate sex and we often seek out sex with each other. So when I see it, I can see how it's just this perfect storm of a community that's so fragile internally and emotionally, and these drugs that are so strong, and then you're tying it with something that is so fundamental to our lifestyle that it's a really important conversation to have.
Yeah. And you are totally right. The way a lot of people that are on the scene or have been in the scene describe the high as is this intense feeling of love and romance and passion. Whilst you're in that really amazing high, whilst you're fucking, it is this like, I am so into this person. And it's probably someone that you've no idea what their name is, but it is this incredible feeling. It's sort of this little shortcut to happiness. And I highly recommend everyone watch the Chemsex documentary. It's a British documentary.
Where do you find it?
Like, stream it. I don't care if you're illegally down. Like, it is worth watching. It probably is. I'm not sure. I know it was on SBS, but I don't think it is anymore. But it's called Chemsex. It's a British documentary. And I was amazed the access that people gave them to their lives. And there's footage of at these parties and things. And a lot of the people in the documentary and a lot of my friends that are part of this scene talk about the people that do it are people that have loneliness or don't have strong connections or have had struggles in their lives and things like that. And I think that's why this shortcut to immediate happiness is so appealing, or to this feeling of romance and love and in passion. And my friend and a lot of other people say that they can't now have sexual experiences without being on these drugs. Like, it's just not, it doesn't work, it's not sexy, it's not exciting for them anymore. So we're lucky that we don't miss out on that. And that is what I find really heartbreaking about that.
And those feelings of loneliness and the wanting to bypass or have a shortcut to euphoria and not particularly unique feelings within our community. And the thing about this conversation and a lot of viewpoints about chemsex and puff and play and P&P is the judgment there. We really need to tone it down a notch.
Fuck
because
absolutely.
It's something that literally any member of our community is susceptible to, because we all have had struggles with our mental health and insecurities, and those drugs are so fucking strong and they're so easily obtainable that it's really easy to see a P&P account on Grindr and scoff or to see some member of the community spiral out and cast a judgment, but the difference between it happening to them or to you could purely be circumstantial.
Absolutely. And, it started because they were just at a party and got offered something and then were like, well, that was fun, I'm going to do that again. And and the other really interesting thing that they talked about in the documentary that I hadn't really considered before was the names that the gay community gives to things. So they were talking about like, oh, you're having a little bit of Tina, we're having a little Tina party, you're getting on the glass barbecue, you know. We're having Auntie Gina over today, you know. And it's because if I said to you, do you want to come over to my house for 4 days? We're going to have 80 guys over from Grindr. We're going to use 4-week-old needles. And I'm paraphrasing what this man said on the documentary. But we do. We make it sound a lot prettier because no one's going to do that if you said it in the real way. But that's if you say, oh, we're going to have a little pee and pee, you know.
Yeah, it sounds way more lighthearted.
We're going to have a girly weekend.
I don't have a lot of experience with P&P or... It's also called Wired, I feel like. Is that another term for it? Because I remember seeing that on dating apps and stuff. I remember a couple years back before I lived in Melbourne, I was visiting here for like a long weekend or something, or like went out partying and ended up going home with a guy. And during our time together... He was constantly taking something and I didn't really know what it was at the time. He was just so dependent on it. I remember being annoyed, and then I remember going to sleep afterwards, like I stayed over, and he just kept getting up and going to do it.
Yeah.
And then he was all jittery in bed and just like twitching.
Was he drinking while you were with...
I can't remember. It was like...
It sounds like G, but...
Yeah, I think... I found out later on that it was liquid G. I had no idea what that was or how bad it was. But yeah, he was just constantly doing this drug. I'm like, do you really need this to sleep? Like, just go to bed? And I think I left because I was like, okay, this is just like, I can't sleep. You're just like twitching next to me. Like, what are you even doing? And I just couldn't understand it. And I remember just that always stuck with me and I found that very scary.
Yeah.
That someone could be so dependent on it, even like...
The psychosis thing is a really big thing, which is that twitchy sort of thing, and is something that correlates quite heavily to continued drug use and staying up for days on end and that sort of thing. But like I said earlier, there's got to be something that balances it out, because people love doing it, even though they're aware of how much they hate all of the side effects that are happening. When I was asking my friend questions about it for this podcast, I said to him, do you wish you'd never tried it? It sort of threw him off quite a bit, and he was like, he was actually quite emotional about it.
Yeah.
And he was like, I've never really thought about that question. It's really hard to answer because I fucking hate that I do it now.
Yeah.
I hate every time I have a relapse and go back into it and disappear for a few weeks. But the euphoria that I feel when I do it is so incredible that I can't imagine a life not knowing that feeling that I have when I do it. And then after we talked about that for a while, and eventually said, look, I'd have to go with my head and say, I wish that I'd never done it, but my heart says, no, I'm glad I did. And just before we wrap up, if anyone listening is battling with the chemsex scene or addiction and would like help, if you are in Melbourne, there is a place called the Northside Clinic, and I've had a few friends that have gone there to deal with this sort of thing. Unfortunately, I don't know a lot of other places in other cities, but perhaps if you know of places in other cities, you could share them in the group for people that might need assistance.
Yeah. Good idea. But yeah, definitely share information, and there are resources out there, especially if you may not be the person afflicted or partaking in chemsex, but maybe you know someone that is, and it'll just give you a better understanding of the struggle that they're going through, or the situation that they're in, rather, so we can start battling the stigma towards chemsex, because it's a very realistic thing. It's an understandable thing, and it's happening to many, many wonderful people
in the community. And I guess also the other thing that I would hope is just try not to be too judgmental if anyone you know is going through it, and try and keep an open mind with that.
Well, that's us for tonight. Thank you for listening, everybody.
The entire lemon meringue.
Oh, yeah. We've just been scoffing this lemon meringue the whole episode. Going to be bouncing over the walls.
And guys, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And we just got over 100 ratings on Apple Podcasts. Woo!
Gold star.
Yes. Oh, no.
Don't do that.
And please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and eventually Instagram
Instagram.
Our handle is @gaysrevolting. Share messages. We've got a Facebook group as well, which is a great little community.
Yeah, we love your messages.
And thank you for a very open and honest discussion tonight, boys. It's been lovely.
That's been lovely.
Especially the Will and Grace stuff.
Your favorite. That was
deep. Sharing is curry.
I love you all, and I'm so glad I don't have to see you for another week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.